Gerritsen and Toth presents The Shift with Jack Johnson on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM.
It is Tuesday, and it's another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Shout out to our presenting sponsors, starting with Gerritsen and Toth. They handle the most complex felony, federal, or state criminal defense cases. You'll find them in doing that successfully, helping criminal defendants all over the Kansas City area and Northeast Kansas for years. Also, be sure to visit Kim Hauer and Associates Agency at 150 Metcalf in Overland Park, or give Kim and her team a call at 913-649-2002. That's 913-649-2002 for a quote on your home and auto insurance today. But if you call that number and mention that you heard their ad here on The Shift, Kim and her team will give you a free $10 gift card to Starbucks to use whenever you would like, coffee, tea, breakfast items. It's your $10. All you got to do is call that number at 913-649-2002 and tell Kim and her team at American Family Insurance that you heard their ad right here on ESPN Kansas City. I know the NFL season has concluded. We're still a couple of weeks away from the NFL draft from Kansas City. And I know at some point this week, we will not have a show on Friday or Monday or Tuesday the following week. I'll be out of town. But we will at some point this week go back into our mock draft, see who is projected to go to Kansas City with the 31st pick. But as for the current news involving the Kansas City Chiefs, and there has been some rumblings because free agency is in full swing. Right. Actually, since the last time we had heard the Chiefs kind of be in the news big time was last week, Orlando Brown Jr. walking away from Kansas City, or at least mutually agreeing to part ways, not coming to common ground on a big time contract. And he signs for a lot less money with the Cincinnati Bengals. That was really the last time we saw the Chiefs in the news in a significant way. And it wasn't the Chiefs signing anybody. It was their left tackle going to their bitter rival in the AFC in the Cincinnati Bengals. But I think we're going to start seeing things heat up right here in Kansas City. And especially with the wide receiver market. The Dallas Cowboys were once in the running for Odell Beckham Jr., likely out now after trading a fifth-round pick to acquire Brandon Cooks from the Houston Texans. So now Odell Beckham Jr., who's still getting, you know, suitors out there. Now, what his asking price is a different story. There was rumors out there that he was offered a one-year, $4 million deal, and he turned it down. We don't know which team it was. Maybe it was Kansas City. Maybe it was Baltimore. Who knows? But everybody's fully aware that Odell Beckham Jr. is coming off a season in which he didn't play. We can remember back to the Super Bowl between the Rams and the Bengals where he tore his ACL, missed all of last year, and there were medical concerns. There was talk of the Cowboys being interested, the Chiefs being interested, but now this really is the offseason of the Odell Beckham Jr. sweepstakes. But it's not just him, because another wide receiver that is going to be highly sought after, a coveted member in the free agent market, is DeAndre Hopkins. And what DeAndre Hopkins is going to be worth. And right now in Kansas City, after letting Juju Smith-Schuster walk, as he signed a three-year deal, $33 million with the New England Patriots, the Chiefs need a guy to replace that production. I know that we've heard that the Chiefs are very high on Kadarius Toney, and he can be a number one wide receiver in this offense. And folks, I don't need to sit here for 20 minutes and explain to you that Patrick Mahomes doesn't need a true wide receiver number one in this offense to win a Super Bowl, because he did it last year. He won an AFC championship game throwing to Marcus Kemp in the fourth quarter. I know it was one pass, but that's what he was working with because of injuries. Mecole Hardman was hurt. Juju was banged up. Toney was banged up. Now you'll have Marquez Valdez-Scantling back. You will have Kadarius Toney back. Sky Moore will be in year two. And I think it's a fairly good chance that the Chiefs will go wide receiver in either the first round or the second round. They want to continue to reload that group, get younger, get more cost efficient. But I still think there is going to be a name to be added through the free agent market. And I think that's either going to come down to Odell Beckham Jr. or DeAndre Hopkins. Patrick Mahomes restructured his contract that opened up about $10 million for Brett Veach and company to go spend somewhere. Now, they were active last week and the week before that. They get Charles Omenihue. They solve an edge-rushing hole that was left by Frank Clark. So now you have your starting edge, and Charles Omenihue can also flip inside. You have George Karloftis starting opposite of Omenihue. So the edge-rushing positions are pretty much locked up at this point. Not saying you can't add there, but I think at this point it's about adding depth to those spots. As for the tackle positions, right, you went out and spent a lot of money on Juwan Taylor. Laremy Tunsil signed a massive extension with the Houston Texans, so the pipe dream of getting both Juwan Taylor and Laremy Tunsil is dead. It's done. So right tackle is still open because Juwan Taylor is going to be the Chiefs' left tackle. Right tackle can be solved in the draft, or it can be solved in free agency. Right, the Chiefs right now for their offensive line after the signing of Taylor are just kind of piecing together some depth pieces. They bring back Nick Allegretti. They bring back Austin Ryder. Just need depth there, but that's on the interior. So the jury's still out on who the Chiefs would want at right tackle. Maybe it's Lucas Niang. Maybe they think after a year of not playing, resting up, healing up, they can put him at right tackle. Or the prodigy in the making, Darian Kennard, who they took in the draft last year out of Kentucky, could make the switch from guard to right tackle. Or like we just said, here in a couple of weeks, they could use their first-round pick or move up in the first round and find themselves a tackle. And there you go. Left tackle and right tackle solved, much younger as well. But as for the wide receiver room in Kansas City, I think it's a little bit of a smokescreen that the Chiefs believe Kadarius Toney's a number one. It is one thing if Kadarius Toney went scorched earth last year. That wasn't the case. Kadarius Toney turned around his career with the Chiefs. He had no receiving touchdowns. He had been banged up in New York. He was catching passes from Daniel Jones. Didn't really get along with coaches there. Didn't get along with the game plan. Comes to Kansas City, has a touchdown in the Super Bowl, has a couple touchdowns in the regular season. He's utilized a lot more in a different way. But Mecole Hardman is going to walk. I think that is probably the belief now. If his market, his AAV is set around $10 million, I don't think the Chiefs are going to go out and spend that money on Mecole Hardman because you have a Mecole Hardman 2.0 and Kadarius Toney. That's how I see Toney fitting into this roster. Toney is going to just step into the shoes left by Mecole Hardman. He's not stepping into the shoes left by Juju Smith-Schuster. Just like Juju Smith-Schuster wasn't stepping in the shoes left by Tyreek Hill. You have to package up this group in a little bit of a different way. But we've seen Brett Veach be uber-aggressive in the offseason before. Just because he didn't have a true number one last year doesn't technically rule out he wouldn't go out and get a number one like DeAndre Hopkins. But also, who knows what DeAndre Hopkins is at this point in his career after this era in Arizona. Now, last year, in a limited amount of games, he had, what was it, over 700 yards receiving. He still has that potential. He had the PED suspension. He'd been banged up a couple times in Arizona. He still would be a fantastic fit in Kansas City, and that would be a nightmare scenario for the rest of the AFC. But also keep in mind that DeAndre Hopkins may be a guy that wants his contract restructured, wants to get paid a little bit more. And for a guy that's 31 years old, does Brett Veach want to do that? And I think the best case here in Kansas City is that they let Tyreek Hill walk and they won a Super Bowl with the weapons they already had. And they went out and got Juju on a one-year deal. They signed MVS to a three-year deal, got Sky Moore in the draft, traded for Kadarius Toney, and kept Mecole Hardman around for one more year. Added Justin Watson. Like those six guys right there won you a Super Bowl, at least in the receiving game. And Jerick McKinnon came on a little bit later in the season as a receiving weapon. Like, you won a Super Bowl with those guys, which means you don't need to break bank and go out there and get a top-level guy to replace Juju Smith-Schuster. But it's also about continuing to keep your quarterback happy. Right, Patrick Mahomes has already shown he is unbelievably happy in Kansas City. for a guy that's restructuring his contract to save money for the front office to spend, that shows that he's happy. He's content about where he is. He still has weapons. He's still got his coach. Matt Nagy's now the OC. I'm sure Patrick Mahomes is thrilled with all of that. But the way you keep your quarterback happy is you still try to be aggressive and get guys that he can throw to. It's not about every single path leading to the dynasty that New England was. Because what eventually pissed off Tom Brady years down the road in Foxborough is that Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick stopped giving him weapons. At the very tail end of his time in New England, Tom Brady was throwing to a tight end and Ben Watson that he was throwing to 10 years earlier. There were no more weapons in New England. Now, that's when Tom Brady was 40-plus years old. He still had great weapons like Wes Welker. He had Randy Moss for a couple of years. You know, he had Gronk for a long time. No, even guys like Julian Edelman and Damian Amendola turned into better weapons. And I'm sure he was thrilled with that. But at the very tail end of his career, he wasn't having much help. Now, you can't rely on winning a lot of games with Chris Hogan as a number one or number two. And that's what eventually forced Tom Brady out. Because at the very tail end of his career, he's smart, he's intelligent, he knew, I have to go somewhere else where they are going to give me what I want. And the hierarchy in New England was not Tom Brady, everybody else. It was Robert Kraft, Bill Belichick, then Tom Brady. He was third on the totem pole, and he didn't want that. In Tampa Bay, he was who everybody answered to. Front office, head coach, everything, which is why he got all those weapons. He got the great defense. He got all those weapons on offense. He got the running backs. He got the offensive line. And in Kansas City, not saying they're anywhere close to that situation that happened in New England back in 2019, that eventually led to Tom Brady deciding, hell, I don't want to retire in New England. I still want to go win a Super Bowl. Now, Patrick Mahomes coming off a Super Bowl win is not in desperation mode. He's not begging the front office to give him weapons because Brett Veach, more often than not, 9 times out of 10, is going to give number 15 what he wants. Now, they didn't want to pay Orlando Brown Jr. They still filled the left tackle hole with a very good tackle and a younger left tackle who was actually making the switch from right tackle to left tackle, and Juwan Taylor. Got some help defensively, right? Drew Tranquil, spending some money to help the defense out a little bit. Now, you can go out there and make these moves that keep your quarterback happy because it shows that you are being aggressive. But at the same time, a quarterback is always going to want to feel like they have trustworthy guys they can throw to. I hate to be the one to say it, though everybody's already aware of it. Travis Kelce's not playing forever. And you want to be able to build this roster to be successful, to sustain that success in the years after Travis Kelce. And with the wide receiver group, it's fine to do one-year deals. You know, Juju Smith-Schuster, one-year deal. Do you want to replace Juju Smith-Schuster with another one-year deal guy like Odell Beckham Jr.? I guess we'll have to wait and see and find out with Brett Veach if that is worth it to him. Because for fans out there saying, well, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. is coming off a torn ACL. He didn't play last year. Not that it's the same injury, but Juju Smith-Schuster pretty much missed all of 2021. With Pittsburgh. And the Chiefs gave him a one-year, $10 million deal, was it? One-year, $12 million, something around that ballpark? Let's go $10 to $12 million. And if he was healthy for all 17 games, he would have had a 1,000-yard season. But he had close to 1,000 yards in, what was it, 16 games, 15 games? So Odell Beckham Jr., though he did tear his ACL, it wasn't a collarbone injury or shoulder injury, no, he still can give you production. And I think we saw in L.A., Odell Beckham Jr. still got something left in the tank. And if you get OBJ for a one-year, $6 million deal, I do think it's worth it. At the same time, does Patrick Mahomes or this offense want to operate every single year with just one-year flip-it deals? Now, maybe there's more of a in-depth approach to this. Maybe it's you sign OBJ to a one-year, $6 million deal, but you're also finding OBJ's replacement in the draft. Maybe Sky Moore is the replacement down the road. Maybe Kadarius Toney is. But I do think this group needs just a little bit more help. Because you can't always bank on just, hey, Patrick Mahomes is going to get us out of everything. You know, we don't have to be aggressive at all in the offseason. Because no matter who we give him, we're going to win games. That may be true, right? If the Chiefs go into the regular season with Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Kadarius Toney, Sky Moore, Justin Watson, hell, let's throw maybe Justin Ross into the mix as a number or receiver number five, and then maybe they go out and get a practice squad guy. That's who, Cornell Powell. So there's six guys right there. I'm sure the Chiefs would win 11 games just because you still have Travis Kelce, you got a good offensive line, got an average defense, and you have the best quarterback on the planet. You'll likely win 11 games. But also, when you're trying to build a dynasty or capitalizing on every single year when you have a window of contention, right? The Chiefs already have two Super Bowl wins in this window of contention. Like, theoretically, by the NFL standards, they could not win one for 10 years, and still this team would be considered one of the greatest we've seen in a decade run because of the dominance they would still have over a 10-year stretch. They've already done what a lot of teams are still searching for 20, 30, 40 years later. You know, it's been a long time since the Dallas Cowboys have won a Super Bowl. It's been a little bit now since New England won a Super Bowl. You know, it's been a little bit since Pittsburgh's won a Super Bowl. It's been a little bit since Aaron Rodgers has won a Super Bowl. But you still consider those teams really good. And so the Chiefs, it's not like they win 12, 13, 14 games every single year and then never win a Super Bowl. It's not that type of team. They've won twice in 4 years. So you could go 5, 6, 7 years without a Super Bowl, which I don't think would be accepted right now in Kansas City. But you look back and go, man, that was still an incredibly good run in Kansas City. So the pressure is not really on the shoulders of Brett Veach, Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes. They've already done it twice. Like, pressure's on Buffalo. Pressure's on Cincinnati. The pressure is on the Broncos, even though they've been bad the last decade. You went out and spent money. You need to start winning. The pressure's on the Chargers in the AFC. The pressure's on Baltimore in the AFC. Like, those are the teams that have that pressure of going, we cannot go through this entire window of contention and not win a Super Bowl. We can't fall to the Chiefs every single year, but it's also about staying aggressive. That's a point here, that Brett Veach is an aggressive general manager, and he always wants to make sure and ensure that this team will be competitive not just next year, but 5 years down the line. It's why he let OBJ walk and replaced him with a younger, more cost-efficient Jawan Taylor. And even though there could be some growing pains making the switch from right tackle to left tackle, a position he didn't even play in college at Florida, he knows long-term it's going to benefit this team. And wide receiver-wise, it's why they acquired Kadarius Toney. Younger guy, first-round pick, and Brett Veach loves his former first-round picks. But it's about building that roster down the road. But with this wide receiver core, I think it's a very interesting dilemma now in the offseason, because the guys they would go out and get, or they're linked to, or they're rumored to be interested in, are not going to be around a long time in Kansas City. But at the same time, you have people clamoring for a younger group, right? There's going to be people saying, well, there's no need to go out there and get DeAndre Hopkins or Odell Beckham Jr. because they're on the wrong side of 30. They didn't play a full year last year. They didn't play a full year before that. We want to get younger. But there's also people saying, hell, I don't know if it's worth it. Can you win a Super Bowl with Sky Moore, Kadarius Toney, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, and a rookie wide receiver as your top four guys? Maybe you can with Patrick Mahomes. But you also want to be a little bit more aggressive. And maybe in this prime era of Patrick Mahomes, the method here is going to be just get guys on one-year deals so it doesn't derail you 2 or 3 years down the road, put you in cap hell. Like DeAndre Hopkins, let's put it into a perspective here. If the Chiefs trade for DeAndre Hopkins, he's probably here for a year or two max. And then he's going elsewhere. The Chiefs are moving on, something like that. Odell Beckham Jr. will be here for 1 year. Who knows if it'd be a full season. So what I'm wondering now at the front office is, what is the path to success here? How do you continue to build this roster? Because it used to be an easy cop-out, right? It used to be Tyreek Hill's there, place whoever the hell you want at 2, 3, 4, and 5. You have Kelce, you have Hill, that's all you need. But then you realize when Tyreek Hill's gone, you have to have about 4 stable guys that if Juju Smith-Schuster's bottled up, you can trust Marquez Valdes-Scantling to be the number two guy. Or when both those guys are bottled up and Travis Kelce's bottled up, you can rely on a Mecole Hardman, a Sky Moore, a Kadarius Toney. That's, I think, the path to extending this window, keeping it open longer than the AFC would hope for. But also, this offseason, it's a little bit different. Now, sometimes in the offseason, or with Brett Veach in general, you take different routes. I think that the fans will expect him to do one thing. You know, everybody's zeroed in on these two guys. And then he'll go out there, make a trade, and get a guy that you go, wow, that actually makes a lot more sense for this team. Maybe they are slightly entertaining the D-Hop deal, or maybe they are strongly considering it. Maybe they've already made an offer for DeAndre Hopkins. But the big question's going to be this offseason and before the draft, because I think these two guys are going to find a landing spot before the draft. That's just my hunch right now. I have no inside sources. But if they find a spot and it's not Kansas City, I think we can likely agree on the Chiefs are going to solve one of their wide receiver holes through the draft and early on in the draft. It's a loaded draft class. There's a lot of talent. You know, Jalin Hyatt out of Tennessee is a guy that makes a lot of sense. The kid out of USC makes a lot of sense. Maybe you trade up, try to find an elite-level guy like a Quentin Johnston out of TCU. Like, these are the type of moves you can make to solve some of your problems. But do the Chiefs want a couple of year one, year two, year three guys in Marquez Valdes-Scantling as the wide receiver group moving forward? I guess Brett Veach will really let us know. As for the pulse that I have on Odell Beckham Jr. or DeAndre Hopkins, I think the longer DeAndre Hopkins is available, the more likely it is. Because that means nobody is meeting the asking price for Arizona. And they're going to have to unload him at some point, and maybe that is for a third rounder or a fourth rounder. And the Chiefs, believe it or not, have a lot of picks to give. Now, I wouldn't mortgage away all those picks to bring in DeAndre Hopkins because he makes you good for 1 year. And we don't even know if he'd play a full season. He's still a number one type of receiver, but I think there would be some concerns, though. Odell Beckham Jr., who knows what he looks like after a torn ACL? More often than not, those guys are a step slower. They're not as effective anymore. But if he is cheaper, a one-year, $5 million deal, it could make sense as a number three wide receiver in this offense. But as for the draft, you go and solve your problems there. Now you're incredibly young, and you're not paying a lot of guys in your wide receiver group. Your highest paid receiver is Valdes-Scantling. You're not paying Sky Moore much. He's on a rookie deal. Not paying Kadarius Toney much. Rookie deal. And you'd be playing a rookie on a rookie deal. So there's three guys that Patrick Mahomes will be throwing to. You're not paying a lot of money. But you go out there and get DeAndre Hopkins, maybe you are. It makes you better in 2023, 2024, but does it make you better in 2026, 2027? Marco, right now, if you had your pick, if you are Brett Veach and you have the option of going for either two of these receivers, I think we all understand Odell Beckham Jr. is going to be a lot cheaper. He didn't play last year. He's likely not going to get a contract somewhere between 10 or 12 million. It's likely going to be sub 8 million, would be my guess, because he was banged up. He didn't play all of last year. There were physical concerns. And when you're coming off a torn ACL, you're not going to get a 10 to 12 million dollar deal on the wrong side of 30. Or do you spend a little bit more, mortgage a couple draft picks, and get a DeAndre Hopkins, who by far and away would be your number one wide receiver in Kansas City?
Man. And I have to choose between one of those two players, huh?
Yes. I guess, you know, see, I'll throw in a third option. You could say no to either of them, and I'm going to use a first-round pick or a second-round pick on a wide receiver.
See, the thing with DeAndre Hopkins is there's just so much money left to be paid there where, as far as, I don't know as how much of a restructure he would have to go into his remaining 2 years of what he has left on his current deal, because that's the only thing that's keeping me away from him right now. Is I'm fine with having to trade for DeAndre Hopkins because I always believe that the Chiefs will be able to make up for some lost picks with compensatory picks later on. So yeah. I have no problem with them using assets there to trade for Hopkins. It's just a matter of the money and how they're wanting to spread out, because he's due to make $30 million this upcoming season. So, and I would want to put a lot of that, a lot of his 56 over the next 2 years. I mean, I would say, all right, let's commit to D-Hop for two more seasons. Keep him until 2026. That takes him up until just about under 35 years old. Listen, what they're trying to replace right now in Juju Smith-Schuster is 78 receptions for just under 1,000 yards from this last season with only three touchdowns. So you're not trying to replace the scoring necessarily, but it's just a matter of the receptions and the yards, being that guy on the third down for Patrick Mahomes. So and when we talk about what is needing to be replaced statistically and how – which weapon remaining out there can be that if similar, if not better than Juju. I mean, I would say D-Hop. I would say go out there and get DeAndre Hopkins. I'm not too familiar with the receiving class this year with the draft coming up, because that's another thing. I would say, all right, maybe you go out and you sign a Jarvis Landry or DJ Chark, although I think he's going to be more expensive than Odell Beckham Jr. Maybe you get an Odell and then draft someone in the first round if Brett Veach likes a receiver there. So I think you can always go that route too, where replacing what Juju brought production-wise, you can replace it with two guys. But I just think right now, if you're looking for a fix it now, final answer. I know I give you a long roadmap all the time to my final answers. I would say draft a receiver and sign Odell Beckham. There's more opportunity for money. Put the money in the bonuses there. It's not going to hit you
incentive
as hard
based,
on the cap.
It's
not going to hit you as hard on the cap. So I would say go that route. If you're Kansas City, because I like the idea of Marquez, and then having a more expanded role for more of a higher role for Kadarius Toney and Sky Moore, because at the end of the day, your wide receiver one is still Travis Kelce.
Yeah, Travis Kelce's always going to be that number one pass-catching option, probably into his age 37, 38, 39 season, just because of how he's been able to age at this point in his NFL career. But I do think you have to have some backup plans, right? If Kadarius Toney gets banged up in week three, hamstring problems, groin problems, something else, you got to be able to rely on a guy that can step up and fill that role. Maybe that's through the draft. Maybe that's OBJ. Because right now, it's a lot of question marks, that wide receiver group. But still very early in the offseason, moves can be made. The draft is upcoming here in Kansas City. I'm sure Brett Veach has a plan A, B, C, D, E, and F for what to do with that wide receiver group. All right, we'll take our first break of the show. When we come back, we will talk some Major League Baseball and the boys in blue down in Surprise, Arizona. Can you believe this? Opening day is next week, next Thursday. So leading up to that, we will have plenty of Royals talk over the next couple days or so. That's next on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. On the Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We are inching oh so close to opening day in Major League Baseball. If you're still searching for something to buy the time before the games on Thursday, the Sweet 16, that is, I'm assuming if you're a Kansas State fan, you can always tune in to the World Baseball Classic tonight, as it's the championship game between two of the heavy favorites and the United States of America and Japan. That on the first pitch of 6 p.m. tonight on FS1. If you've been watching all the last 2 weeks, you'd understand how exciting this game is shaping out to be. The environments have been unbelievable for baseball. You want to think about a postseason atmosphere. We've gotten them in nearly every single game in Arizona and Miami. I mean, Venezuela had a lot of fans. Cuba had a lot of fans. Mexico was electric. Puerto Rico was electric.
Italy was even fun to watch on the other side of the bracket. U.S. has a lot of fans, and even Japan has had a good turnout, but should be a fantastic environment tonight in Miami. First pitch, 6 p.m. It'll be Merrill Kelly going for the United States of America. We'll see if the U.S. can bring home their second straight WBC title and their first since 2017. Now, since I brought up the WBC, I think it's fair to mention that there are two Royals on the United States of America, and Bobby Witt Jr. and Brady Singer. Both guys have played a very limited role. Brady Singer got roughed up in the U.S.'s only loss in pool play against Mexico 11-5, and Bobby Witt Jr. does have a hit in the WBC in that same game, an RBI double against Mexico. But I think it does raise a question for the Royals organization, and how concerned are they for those two guys that are getting the experience of a lifetime? And I think it is definitely an honorable and important thing for those guys to play with USA across their chest. It represents the Royals, it represents their country, and they're playing with the MLB All-Stars. That's really the experience they're getting. Bobby Witt Jr. is getting input for some of the game's greatest players. Brady Singer's working with some of the best and experienced and seasoned veterans out there in the bullpen. I guess it's important for them. But I think for the Royals, they may be looking at this and going, it's great that they are representing their country, but keep in mind, too, these guys have not been playing any game action for the last couple of weeks. They've been getting their work in, and maybe the same amount of work they'd be getting in spring training. But Brady Singer has only thrown once in the last week or so, and it wasn't very good. It wasn't like in spring training where he's going to get a start every fourth day or so, throw 50 or 60 pitches. He may be a little bit cold going into the regular season. I mean, right now, by all accounts, I would expect Brady Singer to be the team's opening day starter against the Minnesota Twins next Thursday. But I think there should be some concern there. I just realistically here. Now, all these guys may be a little bit rusty. Brady Singer and Bobby Witt Jr. are not the only guys that are sitting the bench. Right, Cedric Mullins for the Baltimore Orioles, one of their best players, the center fielder, one of the best center fielders, I think, and leadoff hitters in the American League. Had a little bit of a down year last year, but was an all-star the year before. Now, he's a guy that's not getting everyday bats because that outfield is loaded with Mike Trout out there in center field. So every guy on that team, you know, unless you're the superstar, you're the Nolan Arenado, the Paul Goldschmidt, the Trey Turner, the Tim Anderson, you know, those type of guys, you're not playing every single day. And maybe they're still getting their work in just fine. It's not anything to worry about. But I'm sure the Royals are looking at it and going, that does bring some concern. That if they aren't playing, is it going to really affect us in the first 2 weeks of the season? Now, they could be looking at it and going, hey, it's the first 2 weeks. We want to get off to a hot start. But it's all right. Because these guys also got a very valuable experience and valuable work on the game's biggest stage or second biggest stage next to the Major League Baseball postseason. The WBC is a very big deal. People will tell you it's just exhibition games. It's meaningless. It's a very big deal to a lot of guys playing in that. It's a postseason atmosphere for 2 weeks straight. You are playing the best of the best. So there's a lot of valuable experience in that, but I'm sure for the Royals, they're looking at Bobby Witt Jr. and Brady Singer and going, huh, I'm not completely sold that they are going to be just fine and good to go by next Thursday. Maybe they push Brady Singer back a couple of starts because he has been so ice cold there out there in the bullpen. And he had one outing, and it wasn't very good. And he was rattled, and his stuff wasn't as good. You want to get him back on the horse. Maybe he does get a start or two before they break camp out of surprise. Bobby Witt Jr., I think, is a different story because I would still say for a hitter, you're not getting a ton of work there in the spring training, and especially not in the back half. Early on, you are, and Bobby Witt Jr. got his work in. He should be fine. Pitching does concern me a bit, because when guys aren't throwing in game action for a couple of weeks, it takes some time to get back in the swing of things. You know, bullpens out there before the game, it's not going to do you much. You know, a simulated game, it's not going to do you that much. So Brady Singer, I think, is going to need at least a start or two to maybe get back into that flow into real game action. Maybe he comes out of the bullpen tonight. Now, the U.S. doesn't have a very deep pitching staff. They may need him. They're not going to ask Merrill Kelly to go 5-6 innings. They don't have that type of dominant starter. They may piece together a couple guys, and Brady Singer may be a guy to come in out of the bullpen. Just something to bring up in regards to the Kansas City Royals. But what I did this morning, early on, is since we are 1 week away or 9 days away from opening day between the Kansas City Royals and the Minnesota Twins, I thought it'd be a great time to look at what the projected opening day lineup would be for the Kansas City Royals. Because I think once you get into late March, mid to late March, you can kind of iron out who's going to be starting 1 through 9, what the bench is going to look like, what the rotation's going to look like, and what the bullpen's going to look like. And I think there already were a lot of locks going into the season. That's kind of the one thing to point out here, that the Royals didn't have many position battles. And you could take that one or two ways. You could say, that's great because there's not a lot of concern as to who's going to be playing where. In years past on some really bad Royals teams, you didn't know who's going to be playing in the entire outfield. You didn't know who the left fielder was going to be, the center fielder, the right fielder. Didn't know your opening day starter was going to be. The Royals didn't have one until they inked Zach Greinke last year. And it's probably not going to be Zach Greinke as the opening day this year unless Brady Singer's not able to go. But as for the 1 through 9, and I'm sure some of these guys can be mixed up a little bit in where they're going to be hitting in the lineup, but here is what I have for the Kansas City Royals next Thursday. I got leading off and playing right field MJ Melendez, who really shined in the WBC with Puerto Rico and was hitting in the 3-hole for Puerto Rico, a very loaded team, might I add. And then I got Bobby Witt Jr. hitting second and playing shortstop. I do think that Michael Garcia is going to be on this team before June, and the Royals will have to think to themselves, where do we want to play these guys? Because Michael Garcia is still a very good defensive shortstop, and Bobby Witt Jr. has experience at third base. Garcia does not. And maybe the Royals make the adjustment and go, all right, Bobby Witt Jr. can still be a very valuable third baseman and will have great defense at short. But as for opening day, as for April and May, I don't think there is any reason to move Bobby Witt Jr. off shortstop and from the 2-hole. As for the 3-hole, I want to go lefty, righty, lefty, so I'll give that nod to Vinny Pasquantino, who played for Team Italy in the WBC, have him playing first base and not DHing because Nick Prado, I don't think, is going to break camp with the team. So the 3-hole, I will give it to Vinny Pasquantino, who I also believe to be the Royals' best offensive bat, the best bat, period, in that lineup. I know you have Salvador Perez. I know Franmil Reyes has had a great spring training. I know MJ Melendez and Bobby Witt Jr. are the young stars, but so is Vinny Pasquantino. And Vinny Pasquantino walks a lot. He's got a great eye at the plate. He's got a great feel for the strike zone, and he's got a lot of pop in that bat. Now, you look up the analytical numbers. You look at the exit velocity. You look at the barrel percentage. I'm not saying he's going to be this guy, but go look at Freddie Freeman's numbers last year and Vinny Pasquantino's numbers and more of a smaller sample size. They're kind of close. Not saying Vinny Pasquantino will be Freddie Freeman, who's always an all-star and in the running to be an MVP, but some of the offensive numbers are there, which makes me believe that Vinny Pasquantino will be the Royals' best bat coming out of spring training. As for the 4-hole, the cleanup, I'm going to go with Salvador Perez here, who was phenomenal for Venezuela in the WBC. And Salvador Perez is going to be approaching this year, I think, with a similar mindset to what it was in 2021. Now, if there was one thing that Mike Matheny did that was a positive in Kansas City, is that in that 2021 season, he really took Salvador Perez off his feet a lot. He got a DH a lot. And I think the Royals are going to take a similar approach here because the best version of Salvi is, of course, a rested Salvi, a guy that's not catching 120, 125 games a year. Now, Salvi's going to want to do that, but Salvador Perez isn't getting any younger, and he's also not getting any smaller. He is a big, big man behind the plate, and he's built like a designated hitter. The only reason or the only flaw right now in the Royals lineup is that their designated hitter, Franmil Reyes, cannot play the field. And MJ Melendez is not a good catcher. And keep in mind, MJ Melendez has not caught a lot this spring, so the Royals are going to carry, theoretically, a third catcher on that roster to help out Salvador Perez. But Salvador Perez, when he's not catching, is not going to be out of the lineup. He's going to be DHing. So then the problem becomes, how do you want to construct this lineup? Do you take the bullet and put Franmil Reyes in right field and risk him losing the game for you defensively? Or do you put Franmil Reyes on the bench and then not have his great bat in the lineup? So the Royals have a good problem to have, but defensively, not so much of a problem that you want. But I have Salvador Perez hitting cleanup for the Royals and catching, Franmil Reyes right behind him, who has been just a monster this spring. He has three doubles, three home runs, been crushing the ball at an elite rate. He's looking very much like the 2020-2021 Franmil Reyes, and not so much the Franmil Reyes of last year that was DFA'd by Cleveland and then finished out the year with the Chicago Cubs. But I think Franmil Reyes has a really good chance to be an impactful bat for a very small cost in the Royals lineup. And he's still 27 years old. He's only a couple months older than Edward Olivares, who everybody considers to be a guy a part of this future. Franmil Reyes very well could be, or the Royals could look at him as a great trade candidate because he's not costing a lot, and teams will be looking for a power bat off their bench or as a designated hitter heading into the postseason if the Royals are not there. As for the sixth hole, I got Michael Massey at second base. There was a scare about a week ago when he fouled a ball off his ankle, left the game, and you thought, oh boy. You know, those type of injuries, if you broke something in your foot or your ankle, they can keep you out for an extended period of time, but it was just a bone contusion. Nothing to worry about there. He's played since then. He's still mashing the ball in spring training. I thought at one point Nicky Lopez would be the guy to take over the second base responsibilities because Michael Massey, you know, defensively is still getting there. He's a good second baseman. He's not as good as Nicky. But since Nicky had been there the last couple of years, I thought maybe they'd give the odd to the veteran of that group. But the Royals are heading in a different direction. Nicky's still going to be on this team because he was great for Team Italy, but he'll be the utility guy, I think, off the bench. As for third base, it's not going to be received well by Royals fans, but it's going to be Hunter Dozier. He's looked a little bit better defensively. His footwork still isn't that great. His bat has been better in spring. You're hoping Hunter Dozier can stay healthy, but here's the thing, and it's pretty simple. The Royals are paying Hunter Dozier, and they don't have another third baseman on the roster. You know, you watch Moneyball, and we love to quote Moneyball on here, but it's kind of the same thing with why Art Howe in 2002 didn't start Scott Hatteberg at first base, because he wasn't a first baseman. Now, Carlos Pena was their only first baseman on the roster, which is why they started Carlos Pena there. I just watched Moneyball a couple nights ago, so that's why I have to bring in this analogy. But the Royals do not have another third baseman on their roster. I know Nate Eaton's played there, not a lot. I know Mikel Garcia's played there a little bit in spring training, not in a regular season game. They do not have another third baseman on the roster. Therefore, it's going to go to Hunter Dozier. They're not going to cut Hunter Dozier when they're paying him all the money and give it to a guy that has no experience over there. That would be a disaster waiting to happen. Now, Hunter Dozier still might be a disaster waiting to happen, but at least you know it's a guy that's played there before. He's comfortable with that spot. And maybe he does make some improvements defensively, you know, working with the new coaching staff. But I have Dozier in the 7-hole and playing third base. As for center field, I think, and I'm going to say I think with air quotes here, Kyle Isbell's a lock for center field. Drew Waters got banged up. He's got the oblique injury. Those things can linger. But they did ink Jackie Bradley Jr. to a minor league deal. And though Jackie Bradley Jr.'s offensive power and his offensive production at the plate has gone way downhill, he's still a guy that can play defense at an elite rate. He's got a great arm. He can cover ground. And we saw with Michael A. Taylor, the Royals value defense a lot out there in center field. Kyle Isbell's great out there, which gives him an edge, I think, over Jackie Bradley Jr. And he's much younger. And it doesn't make much sense to start Jackie Bradley Jr. when he's not in your future plans. But I could see a scenario in which the Royals really want JBJ out there instead of maybe Kyle Isbell. But he's had a good spring. He's a great defender out there. And you need to give Kyle Isbell the look because you need to see if he's a part of the future. So I got Kyle Isbell hitting eighth and playing center field. And lastly, I read David Leske's article on Inside the Crown. If you don't subscribe to Inside the Crown by David Leske, you are not doing yourself any favors because he does a great job giving you all the insight on the Kansas City Royals. But he's not so sure that Edward Olivares is going to be an opening day starter. And that's another spot that could go to Jackie Bradley Jr. He hasn't had the best of springs, speaking of Edward Olivares. He's got an option as well, as surprising as that to hear, because he bounced between Omaha and Kansas City a hell of a lot of times over the last 2 years. But Edward Olivares is maybe not a lock, because here's another thing they could do. They could start Edward Olivares in AAA. They could put Franmil Reyes in the outfield, which I would not be a fan of, but they could put him in left field. Then they could DH Vinny Pasquantino, and that would open up a spot for Nick Prado at first base. Those are maybe the most likely scenarios. If Edward Olivares doesn't break camp with the team, but I think there's probably an 80% chance that he does. Maybe even higher than that. But I got Olivares rounding it out as the 9-hole hitter in Kansas City. So Melendez in right, Bobby Witt Jr. at short, Vinny at first, Salvador Perez catching. The DH will be Franmil Reyes. Second baseman will be Michael Massey. Hitting seventh and playing third base will be Hunter Dozier. Hitting eighth and playing center will be Kyle Isbell. And rounding it out, hitting ninth and playing left field would be Edward Olivares. As for the bench for the Royals, I've got the utility guys being Nicky Lopez and Matt Duffy, who they gave a minor league invitation to, a minor league spring training invitation to, but they would need to make a roster move on the 40-man to keep both Franmil Reyes and Matt Duffy. So maybe they just keep Franmil Reyes because he's a lock at this point. He was signed to be on the opening day roster, even though he was a minor league deal. They needed a big bat in the middle of their lineup. They have it in Franmil Reyes. He stayed healthy so far to date, and he's hit his ass off in spring. So Franmil Reyes is going to be on the roster. They'll make a move there. Maybe they don't want to bump anybody else off the 40-man for Matt Duffy. If they didn't, they could always put Samad Taylor there, the guy they acquired for Whit Merrifield last year. As a utility guy, he can play both the outfield and second base. But I think right now my gut tells me Matt Duffy can play everywhere in the field, first base, third base, shortstop, second base, and the outfield. You kind of want that instead of maybe a guy that's just limited to the outfield or limited to a corner spot in the infield. So I got Nicky Lopez, Matt Duffy's utility guys, and Freddie Fermin as the third catcher on the roster because Salvi can do the catching, MJ Melendez could do the catching, but I think they need a true catching backup, which would be Freddie Fermin. As for the rotation, this is about as much of a lock as it gets. I got Brady Singer as the one, Greinke as the two, Jordan Lyles, who they inked to a two-year deal in the offseason, as the three, Brad Keller, who's been working with a new pitch, a now sweeping curveball, if you will. I have him as the four starter and the fifth starter. They need a lefty in that spot. I'm going to go with Daniel Lynch, who also has been tinkering with the new pitch as well, with the new pitching staff in Zach Bove and Brian Sweeney. As for the bullpen, a couple different ways you could go here, but I think the long relievers will be Ryan Yarbrough, who they got to a one-year, $2 million deal out of Tampa Bay. And then I also got Carlos Hernandez, who was pumping it at 102 in the WBC with Venezuela. I think he's got the most to prove with the new pitching staff, new pitching coaches, and I think they really can harness something there with Carlos Hernandez. As for the lefty specialist, if you will, I got Richard Lovelady and Amir Garrett. Middle reliever, you can go one or two ways here. I think Taylor Clark could be a lock, but he also has been dealing with lower back soreness, and Jose Quas has been pitching very well in spring, the sidewinder, the guy who was also a FedEx delivery guy a couple of years ago. So Jose Quas could take that spot from Taylor Clark, but I will give the nod to Clark because of how he looked last year. Josh Staumont, pretty much a lock, assuming he stays healthy, and these three automatic locks, and Dylan Coleman is a setup guy, Aroldis Chapman is a setup guy, and the closer, I'll give it to Scott Barlow. So there's my entire 26-man roster for the Kansas City Royals. Assuming they all stay healthy, that's who I think will break camp with the team in surprise later on next week, as opening day is next Thursday against the Minnesota Twins. First pitch, I believe, will be at 3:10 p.m. Central Time. We'll take a very quick one-minute break. When we come back, we'll wrap it up with some fact or fiction. That's next on The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. We are back here on The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Let's wrap up our show with five questions, five takes, and our 5 minutes. That would be fact or fiction. So, Marco, without further ado, fire away.
Jack, fact or fiction, the Chiefs either signed D-Hop or OBJ this offseason?
Ooh, I think I'm going to go fact. I think I can pick between one of those two guys. I like what you brought up. Get Odell Beckham Jr. on a cheaper deal, then go out in the draft and get a wide receiver as well. DeAndre Hopkins, it wouldn't shock me if Brett Veach really wanted to empty the tank and go out in there and get them a number one wide receiver because they've been so quiet on that front. But I think of those two guys, one of them is going to be a Kansas City Chief, so I'll go fact on that.
Fact or fiction, the Chiefs draft a wide receiver in the first or second round.
I got to go with fact here because the wide receiver group is so loaded. Jordan Addison, who played at Pitt with Kenny Pickett, and also USC, Mel Kiper is very high on him. You could also go with Jalin Hyatt out of Tennessee. Don't know if they would move up to get a wide receiver because the class is so loaded, but I think in the first two rounds there are a lot of guys the Chiefs could go with, and I think if you want to try to replace a guy down the road, you got to be aggressive with the wide receiver group in this draft. So I'm going to go fact. Either the first or the second round, Brett Veach will use a pick on a wide receiver.
Fact or fiction, Brady Singer is the opening day starter for the Royals.
Maybe I was reading into it too much that he wouldn't be ready to go by opening day, because that really has been the plan all offseason, that Brady Singer was going to be this team's opening day starter. And they weren't blindsided when he went to go pitch with the WBC, and they sure as hell weren't blindsided when they found out he wasn't going to be starting for Team USA in the WBC. So I think it's still on his plan. As long as he's healthy, as long as he gets some work in, which I'm sure he's still been getting that before the games and after the games with Team USA, he should be the team's opening day starter next Thursday against the Minnesota Twins, so I'll go fact on that.
Fact or fiction, the first Royal to be traded this year will be Aroldis Chapman.
It's going to be somebody out of the bullpen, is my guess. I think the likely trade candidates this year will be Nicky Lopez, Hunter Dozier, in terms of position players. I think Franmil Reyes is another guy as well because he's cheap and he'll be affordable and people want a power bat. But as for the bullpen, there is a long list of guys that are going to be trade candidates, especially since a lot of these guys are on affordable contracts or one-year deals. Scott Barlow is going to be a coveted guy. Josh Stallman, a coveted guy. Taylor Clark, Amir Garrett, Aroldis Chapman. There's very few future locks in the bullpen. I like this bullpen a lot. But for a guy to really generate trade interest, they got to be efficient in the later innings. And for Aroldis Chapman to generate a lot of trade interest, I think he's going to have to be closing out games, with J.J. Piccolo said that it's going to go to Scott Barlow. So as for the first guy off the books, I'm actually going to go fiction. I think it'll be a lesser-named bullpen guy and not a big-name guy like Aroldis Chapman.
And lastly, fact or fiction, K-State will be favored by tip-off on Thursday night.
So Michigan State and K-State, the 3 versus the 7 seed in the East region, will tip off at Madison Square Garden at 5:30 on TBS. They've got 4 guys from New York that want to go and make a big name for themselves, a homecoming, if you will. Marquise Noel, of course, the star of that group. Right now, Tom Izzo's Spartans are a 1.5-point favorite, the over-under at 137.5. Sometimes in the NCAA tournament, they give the nod to Hall of Fame head coaches, and though Jerome Tang is going to win National Coach of the Year, Tom Izzo knows how to make things work sometimes with less. And Michigan State, though technically a blue blood, they are a 7 seed. They lost 12 games this year. And K-State, I think, is not favored for a reason. You're going up to the East Coast, though you have guys from there. Who knows what the fan base is going to look like. You'd have to travel a long way when you went to Greensboro. But I don't see the line flipping that drastically unless there was an injury to be had. So I'll go fiction. Do not think the Cats will be favored on Thursday, but I do think they win over the Spartans and go to the Elite Eight. There is Ray Charles. So that wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We'll talk tomorrow at 10 a.m. You take it easy, Kansas City.